Welcome to the CMO Reset.
I'm Norman Guadagno, multi-time CMO, agency leader, and all-around marketing guy, endlessly questioning how to balance who I am with what I do.
And I'm Jeff Hadfield, longtime journalist, media person, tech industry guy, community and ecosystem builder, partnership forger, and part-time DJ.
Join us for the CMO Reset and get perspective on your work, your life, and the world we're in.
Let's dive in.
Perspective, our point of view.
I'm going to do my best not to lie. Being a marketer can sometimes mean bending the truth a bit, perhaps setting up the narrative in the way that most benefits my side, my position, maybe even leaving out some facts that aren't really necessary in the marketing pitch. But it doesn't mean lying. Being an executive can sometimes mean bending the truth a bit, perhaps setting up the narrative in the way that most benefits my side, maybe even leaving out some facts that aren't really necessary in the story. But it doesn't mean lying. Lying is where we draw the line. No lying. Lying is bad, isn't it? Yeah, lying is bad, but telling all the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth is not always the right thing to do as a marketer or an executive. You can tell we're going down a slippery slope here. Here's an example. You, executive, are asked if there will be a layoff in the company. Someone, as a member of the executive team, know there will, in fact, be a layoff. I know who, when, and what sort of severance package we're going to offer to those people. That's something executives know. So how do I answer when someone in the group raises their hand and asks, will there be a layoff? Well, I can't say, yes, there will be a layoff, because that information remains confidential. It's potentially subject to financial disclosure laws if I'm in a public company. It's certainly not information that can be shared beyond those who may have signed a specific non-disclosure agreement related to the pending layoff. Confidential information must be kept confidential, so you have to answer accordingly. And I might say something like this: well, I can't speak specifically to any potential layoffs or other changes. What I can say is that we need to remain focused on the work at hand and the current quarter. That sounds like something I or you might say. It doesn't actually sound that great, but is it a lie? Not really. Is it the truth? Not really. It's not even something I would want to say. It's a slippery slope. The same might be true if I'm asked if the company is going to be acquired or going to acquire another company. Confidentiality, regulatory restrictions, non-disclosure agreements, etc., etc. Here's another example. You represent the company, I represent the company, and a prospective buyer asks, well, your competitor's product does X, does yours? Well, the answer depends, doesn't it? If I do X, then I can have at it and explain how I do it and why. Hopefully I do it better. Easy peasy. I don't do X, thing that they're asking about. Well, I can say, nope, we don't do X. Maybe the question is done. Or maybe X, that feature they're asking about, is the most important feature to buyers in market right now. And I'm closing the door on a prospective sale if I say we don't do X. So perhaps I say, we believe that the results of the X function are critical to success in this category. And that is why we rely on a proven solution of J, K, and L feature to deliver the same results at X, but also with higher scalability and reliability. X is not always the reliable way of solving the problem in our testing. Maybe that convinced you, maybe it didn't. Maybe it's true, maybe it's not. Maybe I know that it doesn't really do a good job as X at all, and I have 50 engineers working overtime trying to build X, and I need to buy some time. So I build a whole web page on how our proven J, K, and L functionality gives much greater coverage and performance than X. Is it lying? I don't really do X, do I? I'm building marketing campaigns to convince the market that X isn't sufficient to meet their needs. But it keeps coming back to that specific capability, X. Is what customers want. And frankly, as soon as those engineers finish their work and I deliver X, I'm going to build a marketing campaign that says, we have the best X ever. Bending the truth. Little white lies. Shaping the narrative. All a very slippery slope. Although it does sound like a pretty good Netflix series. I am not going to claim that I haven't engaged in shaping the narrative. I have. I drew a hard line, I still do, at lying because lying is wrong. But part of my job has been to shape the narrative to benefit my company. That is marketing and communications in action, positioning at work. It's a slippery slope. Don't even get me started on how data is presented and the ability to use selective results or omit critical context to shape the narrative. Data is our best friend and worst enemy when it comes to storytelling. And 7 out of 10 people agree with me. And all 7 of those people owe me money. Being an executive, frankly, just being a human, requires us to have clearly defined ethics. Well, at least I think it should require us to have clearly defined ethics. I believe I do. It also requires us to have well-developed critical speaking, listening, and reading skills. In the world of business, every company is trying to shape the narrative to get you to buy more. More of their stuff. That's their job. And frankly, as a marketer, that's my job. All of us need to be well-informed consumers of information. We need to read between the lines of the statements made by others. And we need to think about the larger context of the information we present and with which we are presented. We need our critical thinking skills to be above average. And let's all remember that far more than half of us are above average.
Discussion.
There was a lot piled in that monologue, and
it was full of stuff, wasn't it? Were you saying, Jeff, you were full of it as usual.
that's what I was just thinking. The way I paused on that, it almost sounded like monologue was a pejorative, but none of that was informed.
It may in fact be a word that I make into a pejorative.
Right. Stay with us, dear listeners,
Yes.
as we make the word monologue into a pejorative. But yeah, I was going to say that wasn't informed by any experience of mine. It was me pausing to think, where do I want to start? There were a lot of interesting things in there, and I even thought of a few in my mind, some books that are kind of essential for any kind of modern marketer. And one of them was you were talking about shaping the narrative. And Ryan Holiday has a great book called Trust Me, I'm Lying.
Oh, I haven't seen that book, but
It's one of
note.
his early ones, and I like him. I like him a lot. I envy his writing skills because he's very, very good at the he's a good writer anyway, right? But he's very, very good at the research piece of his writing, and so he does great stuff. But his books on stoicism are awesome too. But Trust Me, I'm Lying is pretty interesting in the media manipulation range. And of course, as you were talking about shaping the narrative and then evolved to ethics, I thought, wow, that's really an interesting combination that could be fraught with pitfalls for us. So I feel like
It is one fraught with pitfalls, and I will tell you as a as an executive, I have had to do this repeatedly, and as a marketer, I have had to do this repeatedly. So the combination of marketing executives, at some level, makes me inherently untrustworthy, I guess. But the flip side is, I have leaned as heavily as I can into being transparent and trustworthy. And the example I used of the someone asking, will there be a layoff? And I have had that question many times. There's no good answer for it. When someone asks that question, I just want to be Homer fading back into the bushes, because there's no answer I'm going to say that is the right answer, unless I can definitively say no, which even then is delicate, right? The fact is that I'm going to give an answer that is shaping the narrative. I may know, as I said, the facts. I cannot repeat those facts to these individuals. And it creates a moment of ethical dilemma inside me. And cue Homer walking backwards, right? Because that's all I can do, is
Yeah, no,
to.
that's exactly right. And I, as you gave that example, I was thinking, how have I answered that in the past when I've been in a role that I've needed to answer that? And it's really hard because, as you said, number one, none of us can definitively say no, just period, right? And so, the only answer that's really available is to kind of say, you can kind of say, well, this stuff, or whether it's an acquisition or whatever, right? It's like, I can't say whether there is or isn't, and not because I don't want to help, but because I'm not allowed to talk about any of that kind
That's
of stuff.
right. And we are constrained, and you know this, you've run companies, you know that you are constrained in the things you can and can't say and the implications of those things.
Yeah, and then, building on that, you can just kind of say, but it's always good advice to have your resume up to date. You know what I mean? It's like, I value you on the team, and it's just in today's environment, you should kind of always be keeping your eye on the market. I don't know how else to answer that, right? But
Right, that there is no good sort of like, hey, I mean, you can try the sort of trite but true, no, there's no thing to worry about, and then literally be wink, wink, winking. I don't recommend it, but I have seen people do it. You can also, I think, you have to invest earlier, right? You have to build a culture where you're guiding people to a better understanding. And I've done this, how successful or not, that's for others to determine, where when I see on the horizon that there is the inevitability that people may in fact lose their jobs, or we may in fact sell the company, or whatever it may be, I try to sensitize people to the reality of how the business is performing, which I try to do anyway. And I think it's important that people don't blindly go and sign on the dotted line to work for a company, large or small, and accept that they're just gonna say, oh, everything's awesome. Like, you gotta actually understand how the company's performing. And if you are sufficiently informed and you're watching, let's say it's a company where you see the numbers quarter by quarter, and those numbers are missing the targets that you're setting, then you have to think like an executive or a board member, and you say to yourself, it's now the third quarter that we've missed the targets that we've set for ourselves. We have a lot of employees. Of course, we've been hiring a ton of people. Is there a possibility that, and people do this, they do it inherently, but I encourage people to be more explicit, to know the numbers, to think strategically, and to look into the future so that when you ask an executive, is there going to be a layoff? You're not asking it from like, I could never imagine a layoff. You're asking it from the perspective of, hey, I'm looking at these numbers. They don't look so good. If it was my company, I'd be thinking about reducing expense. And that helps executives not having to bend the truth too much.
As you were giving that example of inside a company too, I was thinking, oh, and by the way, real quick, and it's sort of related to the point I'm going to make, is the other book that came in my mind was Al Reeves' Positioning, except I normally say it correctly the first time, Positioning. And it made me think, as you were talking about this, it's also the way you would be presenting that, for example, your feature X or your X capability example. That is, part of it is, it's like somebody coming in and, I'm trying to think of a good example, and I think your letters were good ones, but it's sort of like saying, hey, I've got a note-taking tool, and by the way, do you also do spreadsheets or whatever? And it's kind of like saying, hey, our users have asked for basic spreadsheet capability, and we feature it in this way. There's just a way to answer. It's like there is a left field feature here that's outside of our core scope. And as time goes by, users request the thing that's kind of outside of the scope. And it's like you position it in a way saying, we're the leaders in this way, and you can solve the problem this way. But it's, and then you've got competitors that are coming in and saying, well, because we do everything in one, we're a superior product or whatever, right? And
Whatever it may be. And that is a real example. You've dealt with it, I've dealt with it. I've actually dealt with that, in companies where we didn't have X, or at least our X wasn't as good as competitors. And the one business problem that our customers are trying to solve. And so how do you navigate that? And you can't just say, you know what? Those guys across town that we compete with, they do X, they do it really well. Go buy them. But you also can't say, well, it's not important, because it's clearly important to the customer. So you have to find a way to shape the narrative, to get them to see the picture of, oh, wait, X is accomplished in many different ways, and here's some ways that we do it. And then you also know that when you do finally deliver X, as I said, you're going to turn right around and say, we have the best X ever.
That's exactly right. And one of the things I was thinking about is there's so much complexity here, right? And you and I were chatting right before the call about building core messaging. There's three things where I don't know, the world's leading X in X or whatever, right? And we repeat that over and over, and we do that through, one and two, whatever that is. If you repeat that, your partners know it, your employees know it, it's the core messaging. And then some competitor comes along. I took a really deep breath for that. Some competitor comes along and has decided that in order for them to compete with you, they need to say that X is a feature that everybody needs. And one of the Gartner quadrants or whatever comes out and adds that in there. And now suddenly, everybody who liked your product is now saying, yeah, but my boss is asking me why you don't have X, because they read an article that says that, there's five things that this kind of product needs, and X is one of them. And then you have to go back and reposition. And so I think that's one of the other things that brings up the ethics. I want to come back and say there's complexity in all these roles, whether you're doing a product manager kind of thing, you're a CMO, you're a CEO, you're anything you're doing that's building the messaging and doing some sales. How do you bring the ethics to that? And I wanted to maybe focus on that for a minute because there's so much complexity. And I think my question around that is, how do you define those ethics? In my mind, off the top of my head, and it's been just for a listener's point of view, Norman surprises me with his soliloquy monologues, And I take some notes, and you're really getting our initial conversation, right? It's like I didn't spend 3 weeks thinking about that. So you really are getting.
That is fair. I will make note. I do in fact surprise Jeff, and not surprise in like balloons, but that he has not heard nor read my monologue before I say it, and then he has to react. So I am this podcast was originally called Putting Jeff on the Spot. It didn't
Right.
feel quite as friendly as the CMO re reset, but
Yeah, some of the early
Jeff has not
drafts were hanging Jeff
heard.
out to dry, Jeff out on a limb, all those. Yeah, but I think what I wanted to leave it here is what could some of those ethical guidelines be? For example, the one that came to my mind, and that's why I brought up the spontaneous response thing, is the one that came to my mind is I would like to at least like to think that I did no harm. And on the flip side of that in some way I made someone's job or life easier. Those are kind of my, I know that those aren't ethical, that making it easier isn't ethical, but the do, not doing harm is kind of a good gauge for me, right? It's like, would my
Do
customer
no
do
harm
fine?
is terrific. I hear doctors supposed to adhere to that, and I like that one for sure. There's no good answer. Some people root their ethics in family traditions, religious traditions, spiritual traditions, philosophical traditions. I think it is a personal set of beliefs you have to develop. And I believe in do no harm. I believe in tell the truth. I believe in putting people first. I believe in respect and dignity. I believe in a set of things that, for better or worse, each of us tries to craft some system for ourselves that dictates what we do, right? We each day confront our own version of the trolley problem. If you don't know the trolley problem, you are in on a trolley car that is out of control. All you have is a switch that can go to the left or the right. There are many variations of the trolley problem, but if you on the right, there are five people tied to the track. On the left, there's one person or a baby tied to the track. All you can do is choose left or right. What do you do? Right, the trolley problem is a great one, but everything involves you sort of really thinking about the implications for what you do. And I think there is, for better or worse, a lapse in executives and maybe even in individuals being asked to think ethically and or morally about what they're doing in their job.
I like that a lot because as you were starting with some of those examples, I was also thinking that in my mind, ethics are things that are not something you leave at home or that you leave at work. They come with you both places. So, like for example, in my mind, the all the ones you listed I liked, but the putting people first, I really like because I feel like I have tried to do that. And it also seems like it is contrary to my experience in many roles or companies or things like that, where it has really been the shareholder or the investors or other things like that that have been put first.
It is a tricky thing, and I of course want to do a good job. I want to make a decent living. I want to support my family. I want to be correct and kind in how I treat others. And it's tricky. I saw something recently that was some sort of visual meme, because that's all we consume nowadays in this world. But I saw something that was something along the lines of, there is a distinct difference between being kind and being nice. And I think that that's an important consideration. I believe in being kind. I may not always be nice or at least not perceived as nice. But I hope that I'm coming from a place of kindness and hopefully consideration.
I like that a lot, and I think this is actually a great place to end this episode for now with almost like a homework assignment. And I would love to hear from listeners as they've thought about what their ethics are as we've talked, if they'd share them with us. I'd love to bring them up in a future episode or surface them in some other way, but it's a pretty interesting thing to think about. And who knows, Norman and I may discover that we have some that we didn't mention or that we've forgotten to bring up, or that we actually really don't have any, but that was a joke. But we'll bring those back up in a future episode as well. But I think this is a great place to wrap it up. And I think with that, we'll call it for this time. Thanks for listening. Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CMO Reset. You can find us on Instagram, Threads, Blue Sky, and at cmoreset.com.